Log Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. A lot has been going on right now. And luckily, we got the chief back this week. You know, he's in and out all the time because every time you turn around, you know, he's called in for something. But he's 100. He gets in there. Joe's running a little late behind. Joe's going to be here. Big John is in the house. A lot going on this week, but before we get to anything and get too deep into this, I got to say good morning, Waco, Texas, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, ATL, of course. Chief, I got to go to you first because somebody close to you had a significant event here recently, and this person means a lot to us. They're never on the camera, but they're behind you and what you do, and so we want to acknowledge that here on the show, of course, because she's family, like we all do. So to Miss Chief, not Mischief, Miss Chief, I always love typing that because it's kind of like the acronym in it, but for on behalf of me, and everyone else can speak for themselves, we wish her a happy birthday and thank her for supporting you.
I'm sure she appreciates that. She's got a summer game right now. That's where I just came from the little one. So yeah, it's been a whirlwind birthday for her. It was on the go. Of course, she worked yesterday, and then at least we got an opportunity to go out last night and be kid free for one time. So it was good. It was a good little dinner we had, and I will definitely pass it on to her and convey that to her. And I know she appreciates that very much.
Now you did some babysitting this week. You did some work with the babies. Tell us about it. What's going on? What are the prospects? How's it looking?
Yeah, I spent the entire week at the academy. Taught patrol operations and consular notification. And in that course, that's where we basically train all the officers on how to conduct traffic stops, how to do high-risk stops, how to do building searches, how to do rapid response to active shooter or active attacks. Public service, you know, the mission of law enforcement, what the mission's supposed to be. Sir Robert Peel, mission of law enforcement, and what that's supposed to be about. And it's a pretty good group of folks from agencies across the area here in McClendon County, including your former agency, Claire's former agency, the sheriff's office, some of the smaller agencies, and you know, it's I enjoy it a lot. Gives me an opportunity to you know, pass on some of the experiences, the things that we see, the evolution of law enforcement, where it's going, some of the reformation stuff that's going to take place, and it gives us an opportunity to put that into perspective with some of these new recruits and folks that are just getting into this business. I will tell you, and I know Joe and I have talked about this in the past, but I did something for the first time that I haven't really ever done, but there's a book out there for those that are law enforcement called Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement by Dr. Gil Martin. And it's a good book to know. It's good information to have. And not that I'm selling it, not that I'm pushing it, but I basically brought a copy for the recruits to see and look at and told them they need to go get this book. They need to get it now because almost everybody that's ever read it has said, you know, they wish they had that 20 years ago. They wish they had this information 20 years ago because of what it does. And it's every bit of it is in line with what we talk about, specifically when we start talking about the mental health of peace officers as they go out throughout their career. You know, the hypervigilance, the levels that you need to be in to also know that when you go home, you need to be at home. So anyway. It was a good week. Long week, as always, a long week. Many late nights. But it's fun. It's fun, and I enjoy it. And I'm going to continue to do it until they tell me I can't do it anymore and I have to go away. So,
quick question to you, Chief. You know, I watch a lot of those First Amendment audit guys, and you know, there's a lot of them out there that are idiots, and they look to provoke. But there are a few out there that are legitimate. You know, concerned people, I would say. And the one commonality I see, and I'm just wondering if this was taught in the scenarios, I'm just wondering, if that, and I see so many officers, they get so caught up in winning the verbal argument with that person that they end up looking foolish. When there comes a time where you have to understand that anything they can see, they can video. You know, leave them alone. Good morning, sir, ma'am. How are you? Can I help you? Yes, no. And then move on. Don't get suckered in. And there are...
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's not in the official TCOL guidelines, per se, you know, what they need to be, what they're going to be tested on for the their state exam, right? Not even what they're going to be tested on in the exam for the ACAP, but in scenario-based training, it's there. And we actually have,
good.
Have several of them now.
Good.
And I make sure that they understand that they, and again, we go back to, you know, one of the main tenets of our job is about knowing about the Fourth Amendment, arrest, search, and seizure, mm-hmm. right? If you don't have that down, then you can't do this. So you got to know when you can do what you can do, right? You know, are they in temporary detention, full-blown detention, or the custodial arrest, right? Mm-hmm. Where are they at mm-hmm. in the scenario? And so I explained to them, you got to know the laws before you can actually ever do anything, right? So if somebody is standing on a sidewalk videotaping, There's nothing for you to get involved in, other than hey, you okay? Cool. Just don't step in the street. Be careful.
Watch and give your name and badge number, please. Most departments that's
required.
It's
required by policy.
Exactly.
We actually, somebody asked us for our name and badge number. It's required by policy. You give it.
Give and move on, and don't do this, because all of them say, "Is that what you tell the judge?" And then you look foolish. You know.
Yeah. You're 100% correct. You know, there are some that attempt to provoke. Don't get – and I made this a major point. Don't get caught up in it.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you need to do. If it's a call from a citizen or a dispatch sends you out there because it's a suspicious activity or whatever, go make your contact. They say, hey, I'm out here videotaping. Okay,
you know,
cool. What's your name, badge number? Chief Devlin, badge 101. Anything else?
There's a few that I like, you know, San Joaquin and Long Island Audit. There's a few that I really like, and because they're real polite, they're professional, they're not antagonistic. And then there are some that are absolute jerks.
Well, and I not that I enjoy watching those videos because they actually make me cringe when I see officers, because it's exactly what you said. We get involved in this verbal mm-hmm. argument. We're trying to win. And there's no arguments. That's number one. Number two, there are some of them out there when an officer does what they're supposed to do, they give kudos to the officer. And they post it and they say, hey, look, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
That's what it's supposed to look like. So that's what you want to do is you want to come away with that positive contact and say, you know, look, I got called out here. Here's why I'm here. You're free to video, do whatever you want to do. You can stand on the sidewalk. Not a problem. You know, we had that here a couple of years ago with open carry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had their rifles, you know, and I actually personally had a group come to our community wanting to do the open carry. It was before they passed the law here in Texas, and they're standing out there with their rifles, and they were going to do a I don't want to say a protest, just a demonstration with their rifles. And I think they believed it was going to be an antagonistic contact, you know, when they came to say that they were, I mean, they came to tell me they were doing it. That's cool. I'm cool with that. But I think they thought we were going to blow up or I was going to lose my mind. And I was like, you know, okay, that's awesome. Where do you want to go? And he told me what the idea, where he thought it was. And I said, well, you got to be careful because there's a daycare on one end and you got a beer barn on the other. So you got to be careful about bringing your weapons close to those areas because, you know, we've got some issues there. And they said, no, we would be right on the public sidewalk. And I'm like, all right, cool. And then, so, you know, they did the, well, where can we go questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anywhere that's the public space, man.
Okay.
And we drove by and we offered them water. Just go see, hey, you need some water? Y'all good? Because it was summertime. Hey, you need some water? No. Okay. With that particular incident, not that always happens, like the public that drove by, let them know what they thought about them standing out there. We didn't have to do anything.
Exactly.
The message was really clear, what the public that drove by from our community thought about those people standing out there. So we just made sure that everybody was peaceful and nobody infringed upon their First Amendment right. And we went on down the road. And that's the big thing. We do, and to answer your question, you know, we off a little long answer, but yes, I've got at least three scenarios that I can think of that involve videotaping on a traffic stop, a call for service where somebody's videotaping. So those are integrated in. And again, I think I taught Clarity Academy, and I don't think I had those in there at that time, but as we evolve in law enforcement and we see these things, I start making up these new scenarios. I keep putting stuff in. So I figure by that time, you know, a couple of years from now, this whole class is going to be nothing but scenarios as we continue to move off. We can't get our stuff together. So, you know, so we're just going to keep on pushing. But those are important, you know, and again, First Amendment right, man. Freedom to assemble, right? Freedom to demonstrate, you know, peacefully, by the way, but you can't infringe upon that.
Appreciate you, Chief. Let's drop down real quick because we got a guest I'm going to get to here in a minute and introduce him. But I gotta go down and say that Ms. Claire, welcome back. How are you? What's going on in your world?
Man, what do we got going on? We just sent out our save the date, so that's exciting. For our wedding in Hawaii. What else? We had the in-laws come visit last weekend, so that's why I wasn't here. But Liv's dad helped me with some stuff in the front yard. Her dad and her brother came, so the front yard landscaping is done. Got to work on the backyard, but that's about it.
All right.
You're
good as long as you don't see lions and tigers and bears and you start cutting that grass and running into the neighbor's yard. You're okay. Let me jump up to Big John. Big brother, what's up, John?
Oh, not much, Dad. I'm looking forward to the show, man. This is kind of dear to me, so I'm just ready to get on with the show.
All right. Before I get to Big Joe, who popped in, I got to go down to a guest that I asked to come in and he does a podcast, an online radio show. You know, Good Brother talks about a lot of topics, very open-minded, very progressive, but with a conservative twist to it. He's not just going to let anything come out. You know, Shaq CL Smooth Live, welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. And we're going to try to reach out to a lot of podcasters that are doing good things and invite them on to participate in our conversations from time to time. What's going on, brother? Uh-oh, you're muted. Hit your mute button. There you go.
Perfect peace, man, to everybody, man. How y'all doing today, man? Everybody on the platform today, how y'all doing?
Good, peace. Good, good. You doing all right up there, man?
Oh, yes, sir, man. It's like 40. It's like 42 degrees there in Texas, man.
No.
I got my beanie on.
Hey, you know what? Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain, brother. Here we go in hard, and we come straight. And, you know, we are not a black or white show, a Republican or Democrat, Christian. We just come in with what it is. And so feel free, you know, nobody here is an expert on anything, but a lot of us have seen some stuff. And sometimes people's life experience trumps other people's opinions, you know, and that's just the way we do the show. We dedicate this show at all times to the voice of the least. The people who never get the microphone, the people who folks never let talk. That's what we do here. And we pay for it ourselves. There are no sponsors or commercials here. And we don't want them. So we keep it 100. We appreciate you being here. And I'm going to pop over real quick before we hit into the topic to Big Brother Joe Mosley. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I'll pop on the camera real quick. It's live and in color, ladies and gentlemen, live and in color. I don't know what else to tell you. I'm looking a little haggard. Been a long week. Let's get it.
All right. Now before we're going to go into it, and I got to start this out because I received a Facebook post, and I'm not going to go into the details about it. It's on my page after the show. Y'all can go to my page, and you can look at this incident that I'm about to just, I don't want to get into a discussion on it. I'm just going to put my feelings out there on it. Chief, I want to hear from you. Chief Mosley, Joe, I don't want to hear from you. You stay out of this part of it because this is your baby, so you stay out of it. But, Chief, I want to hear from you on this. you know, a two-year-old in Harvey, Illinois, was shot and killed. Now, when I read these types of things, this is just Stan. I'm speaking for Stan. Where is all the outrage? A cop didn't shoot this two-year-old. A white person didn't shoot this two-year-old. A gang member didn't shoot this two-year-old that I know of, from what I can see. Where is the outrage? Where is the point of two-year-olds being shot in their houses? That's an outrage, and which I like to call selective outrage. People choose when to be outraged and come on social media and react from there. And Claire and Keith, really, you two, I really, on this, and I don't want to dig real deep into it, but what I want to look at it from the aspect of thoughts and prayers, my condolences to the family and the friends. But I also want to say that I have to give some thoughts and prayers to some other people called officers and first responders. There's one thing to walk by and see a two-year-old's dead body. It's another thing to be there 3, 4, 5, 6 hours with that two-year-old's dead body, keep looking at it, and you got kids at home. Think sometimes while policing does have its issues that we need to address, and we do that on the show, we also have to say, how many of these nightmares do we as a society expect these men and women to go out and constantly absorb and then come away from that? I'm quite sure those officers, contrary to what you all may see on TV, we don't work a murder and then go home and ask the sergeant for 2 weeks off. You wrap that murder up and you go to the next call, whether it's a burglary motor vehicle, whether it's a triple homicide, a fatality accident, whatever. You go to the next call. And I don't think most of us have left a horrible movie or a scary movie, and we talk about how great the movie was and it scared me. Imagine living it. Not for 2 hours, but six. And then going back and reliving it while you dictate, or if some departments are still back in the 20s, type your report, you relive it again. And then you don't get to forget it because you got to keep reliving it, because at some point you're going to have to testify. And then you go home and you look at your kids. And so, when all the thoughts and prayers go to the family, well-deserved, and should go there, I'm also going to say, if we're really open-minded and we want police reform, which is not the community against the police, because there are a lot of officers who aren't happy with the way things are and they want to change too, it's about people. And those officers have feelings that they're taking home. Chief, before I even get to you, Chief, let me ask you, Claire, because you've been through some traumatic stuff. How do you process that kind of stuff without feeling alone, lonely, isolated, nobody understands me? How did you process that kind of stuff?
The difficult thing as a young officer is that you don't, some young officers don't have a family to go home to, so you're living on your own. So you don't have that support system where you can go and talk to your wife or your husband or anything. So mental health before 2020 or whenever it became really popular to talk about needed to be installed back then. But you really don't get through it. You just kind of get through the night, get through the day, to be honest with you, and then you continue to move on to the next call. If there was something in place within departments where officers could come in freely and talk to a therapist about in between calls, or say, hey, I need to take 10, 15, whatever, maybe that would be better. But as far as solving the issue, I don't know how you don't go home with the nightmares, because I definitely did.
Wow. See, you manage officers, and you're in touch with your officers. You know, what do you say to young officers or even veterans? Because in my 25 years, I'm telling you, you do not get over that. You don't ever get to where, well, it's just another dead body. You don't get that hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lifelong thing. I mean, 27 years of doing this, I can remember almost every single one of them. With that being said, from the agency head standpoint,
people have to understand there's not a, the state's not going to come in and mandate you do something. This is an internal issue, right? So with Chief Mosley, with Joe, my friend, he's going to have to deal with this from his agency standpoint, right? And we don't know. We don't know that there are officers who are involved that have a mental health issue going on right now. But Illinois is not coming in and saying, hey, Chief, this is going to get done. He's got to take care of his own people. So this is an independent from department to department. What Claire said is 100% correct. I would love to have a therapist on staff. But do you know what a therapist can pay? Right? So not every agency is going to be able to afford that. I mean, even large agencies are you know, have the luxury of doing that, and they're pushing that forward. Could we come up with something like that? Yeah. What I tell officers is it's a process, and you're going to have to process it, and you're going to have to process it in a healthy way, not an unhealthy way. I don't know enough about, you know, like if Sean Roddy was listening and, you know, chimed in, he could tell you that process. I know enough about it to get myself in trouble, but it's a process that the officers have to go through to deal with it in a healthy manner. And we know the stories of officers who have not dealt with it in a healthy way, and they end up in drug addiction, alcohol addiction, suicide. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going through that process, and so that's the end, worst end of it that could ever come out. Initially, you got to have a debrief, right? We've got to have debriefs available for officers on an incident like this. You know, and I know that I read the article, have not spoken to Joe about it. And, you know, if we do, we're going to do it offline, and that's just going to be between us. But they not only did they have to stand around, they have to actually transported that child in a squad car to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole nother level. That normally doesn't happen. It happened in this incident in order to get care for the child. So those people that were in the car that were dealing with that incident, there's some issues going on. The idea of us all being hard and, you know, just get over it, rub some dirt on it, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had, outside of COVID for this last period, suicide still was up very high on law enforcement officer deaths. So we know that there's a problem, but you need to start with the debrief. Then, and before any of this happens and the debrief takes place, you have to have resources available to send people. You got to have something in place.
That's right.
Right? To send people. Now, I'll tell you right now, I'm not a Chicago PD. I'm not a Dallas PD, Houston PD. I don't have that budget. I just don't. So I've got to be I got to MacGyver this thing and come up with resources that we can get, right? Because they're just not all available to me. I don't have that type of staff. I don't have a specialized unit that deals with mental health. I have an agency close by that has one, and they're very helpful with my folks and can get me people to come help my people. I've got individuals that I can send my folks to. I know that they are in this community. Now, will we have to pay for it? Yeah. But you know what? It's well worth it. It's absolutely well worth it. But those guys are never going to get over that. And I don't think any human being ever gets over anything like that. If you have somebody that's murdered in your family, somebody that's killed, even if they die of natural causes, I mean, I lost my father over 10 years ago, right? Still think about him today, right? It was a natural cause death, but it's still a death. You still carry it with you, I think, for eternity. So the big thing is processing it from the law enforcement perspective. And unfortunately, there are cases where we as administrators have to make people go get it processed, go through this process. Some people just want to deny the fact that it is bothering them, and then it creates work performance issues, and then, I mean, it just snowballs and snowballs. So at some point, you may have to put your foot down and make people go. Sometimes it's not a short process, sometimes it's a very long process, but, you know, again, it's difficult. Those type of calls are horrific. Don't wish that on anybody. Don't wish it on Joe. You know, and if I wish that, you know, if I could help him in any way in Texas up there in Harvey, I certainly would, you know, get up there as soon as I quickly could. But those are horrific. That's a horrific incident to have to put somebody through. But you're right. Where is the outrage? Where is it at? Mm-hmm. I mean, the 2-year-old child, you know, I don't know the circumstances on it. I'm certainly not going to put Joe on the spot, but there's a problem there, and people should be pretty pissed off about that one.
You know, and before we get into the topic, the main topic, I'm going to say this. You know, here's something you all see Joe on here, and all of us on here know JoJo. Y'all see Joe did what you see on the show. And there's he's very poignant. He's very articulate. He gets right to the point. He uses colorful metaphors, as do I, or agitated adjectives. But I'm going to tell y'all, there's another Joe that is a human being. As long as Joe, 30-some-odd years in Chicago, I mean, he's seen stuff that I would give me nightmares. But when Joe calls me, and Joe and Stan, or I've called the chief, or John, and we just have that connect talk where I don't need to talk, I just need to listen. And some things you don't get by. But here's a guy right now that's my friend and my brother. He doesn't get a chance to go mourn and be about Joe, because he's got to take care of all these other officers who are devastated by this two-year-old. And he now has to give them that empathy, that concern, that care, that leadership. And then he has to process all of that shit and still be Joe or Chief Joe or husband or uncle or daddy. That's what we expect. And I just want people, and I do advocate for police reform. Yes, when cops are wrong, I'll call them out. But I want to say, in this whole argument of police reform, when we do it, the police should not have to give up everything to make citizens happy when police officers are citizens. Some of you citizens need to walk out there for 6 hours and see what they see. Not from the safety of the video camera. Big John, before we get in, did you want to chime in on this, brother?
Yeah, I got a question for Jim and Joe, either one of them. But also for you, Stan, my first question is that Joe Mosey, the human being, do you think it's possible we can get him in as a guest on our show? Because I have yet to meet that one.
Wow.
My name's Gene Brutus. That's my way of saying I miss you, Joe.
I can tell.
I have a question for the two top cops, and that is like, okay, relax.
The dog knew it was bullshit question.
I didn't say shut up no more.
Yeah.
We can't do that one.
My question for you guys is, like, okay, so in your city, you can be a little too close to the situation because you control these communities. Are you guys allowed to bring in another office to handle like sensitive cases where your guys may be too personal? They may know the families that's involved. I don't know if I'm asking a question right. If you guys understand my question, but can you bring in like another police department to handle a certain case that may cause less trauma for, let's say, Jim Devlin department than it would yours, Joe?
I'll go first, the chief. It's called a conflict of interest, yes. In those cases, particularly police-involved shootings, you have to bring in an outside agency in order to give the what's called transparency issue. As far as I'm concerned, I want my officers to be close to the community. That's the mandate. In fact, anyone that isn't, that was the ones you want to get rid of. If we don't get close to the community, you have what we have happening now. So within that question is the answer. So are there instances where we bring an outside agency? Yes. Is there a problem when our officers get too close to the community? No. But let me ask this also. The problem I have with policing today is that, and you've heard me say this on many occasions, we use business acumen to run public sector employment. We cannot use those business acumen to do more with less in policing. You do more with more, more resources, better officers, more equipment. The better trained these guys, men and women are, the better off we'll be. So that business acumen has to come off the chart. The other issue is the fact that we see policing as a business. Mm-hmm. Check that out. As a business is a wrong, absolutely wrong model. We have yet to get to the point in policing where we've given it its own genre.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, R&B's got a genre. Blues got a genre. Everybody's got a genre but us. And we have to still define that as opposed to being the occupying force in the United States. Maybe that's not the right answer to look
for. No, I agree. We have the same thing. Where there's a conflict of interest, it's exactly what Joe said. But you can't be just too close to the community. That's where we're supposed to be. And I think what you said in your question was, you know, where it would cause trauma or issues for the officers. We can have assistance come in, but it's still going to be ours. I mean, we just are going to have to deal with those things. But officer involved shooting, misconduct, you know, things that need to have a large light of transparency shown upon them, that's when another agency would come in, criminal law. So, just so people don't get messed up or have to deal with a contentious situation as in the death of a child, there's not very many agencies that would come in and work that for you. That's going to be yours. Now, you can get help. You know, of course, you need to use federal partners. If it came down to it, they would be willing to come in for in most instances. But we have a lot of those agencies around here, Texas Rangers. You know, we've got another large Waco PD could come in and do that. I mean, we have a lot of those resources available to us, provided it was that conflict.
And you also have like a victim, you know, I got to give Waco PD credit. They have what's called a victim services unit, and it started quite some time ago. It's not something they just started with the George Floyd thing. And victim services that we're, even on midnights, they're on call. And we were mandated to call them out. We had to ask, whether it's burglary, motor vehicle, or sexual assault, murder, we had to actually ask, do you want to speak with victim services? Sometimes people didn't, and sometimes they did. And these were volunteers. These people weren't paid. And when you called them, they came out, and they handled a gamut of things that we, the officers, didn't have time to deal with. You know, they sat down with you and talked about counseling options and talked about things they can do. And more importantly, with me as the beat officer, the next day I'm working a whole series of other stuff out here. Not that I've forgotten about your case, but I've got other calls on my screen. Victim Services kept in touch with you. Even with officers, they would say, are you okay? Do you need to talk to someone? Can I help you? You know, we would work sometime. We're processing murder scenes, and I don't care that people watch TV. This shit is not done in an hour and a half. It simply isn't. You may be out there 8 or 9 hours in the rain or the snow or the heat or whatever. These people brought out water, snacks, would arrange for whether they picked up sandwiches from Jimmy John's or somewhere because they knew we were out there. And that's something that my city did and my department did. That benefited the community, and it benefited the officers. So if you don't have a victim services unit in your department, or you don't really know what victim services is, because I don't have time to go into all of it, and I'm not an expert on all of it, I can only give them accolades for what they've done on my calls, contact Waco PD and ask them, do you all have a – can you tell me something? Put me in touch with your victim services coordinator. What exactly do you all do? Because they really do bridge that mental health gap between officers and the victims, and sometimes even the suspects.
Well, I was going to say, Stan, and I don't know if it was this way when you were there, but now it's available to almost everybody else.
Wow.
They've made themselves not only just available to your former agency, but I can call them. Robinson, anybody can call, and they'll come out. And so they understand, and again, I can't give nothing but props for that unit because they have done some amazing things
at my agency,
and they have helped us out. So it's an excellent resource to have. So if you don't have one, and but you have access to one. See if you can get them to come out and help your folks. I'm going to parrot everything you said. That is a fantastic organization.
Absolutely. Now we're gonna get into today's hotbed. And last week we talked about judges, the good and the bad. There's a lot of good judges, like policing. They got some that need to go. You know, they've been there too long. They're sitting up there at the pens and can't stay awake, and they're listening to somebody's future. But we went in on that, and we wanted to kind of continue that run. And two cases for me that immediately come to light in reference to jury selection are the Kyle Rittenhouse trial that's going on and the Ahmaud Arbery case in reference to jurors. And last week, Billy Clark talked about jurors and how jurors are, attorney Billy Clark, how they're selected. But before we get there, Shaq is here, and I wanted somebody who just has a fresh opinion, a street opinion, what's real, what they perceive. And let me ask you, brother, in reference to the Ahmaud Arbery case here in Georgia and the Kyle Rittenhouse case, what is your feelings on those two cases?
Just from the initial look at it, obviously, without having any background information, I'm looking at it from somebody that's rooting for the underdog and whatever that means, you know, but somebody that's mature now, that's pushing 40, I try to wait for all the information, man. And I try to tune in and see and get all the information and try not to jump to conclusions. Because sometimes they can get us into a lot of unwanted headspace. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. How do you, and I want to hear Shaq's opinion. Don't worry about the show. The show is the show. We just do what we do here. And people can like us, not like us, listen next week, don't listen, but we move forward. You're personal, in your gut. I mean, you've been black a long time, and I don't think you're going to be changing anytime soon. When you look at today's court system, and let's take the Ahmaud Arbery jury.
Right.
How would you, and I know you don't know all the specifics, none of us really do, we just know what's reported. How does that... You have to live. I'm here in Georgia. I'm here where this kind of crazy stuff is still happening. Atlanta is right. Not Georgia. Atlanta is in Georgia. But I have to walk around knowing that this kind of situation, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel kind of weird, man. Because like you said, I've seen some of how the jury selection. I'm not familiar with the terms and stuff like that. But to see one so-called black juror on there, and you got 11 other white male jurors on there. That looks kind of way, man. You know what I mean? Be honest. It looks the kind of way. It looks kind of fishy.
And it should. And it should. If you look at the 1954 trials when they were hanging black people in the South, the jurors are what? All white. And that's why you had these issues come up 4 years. Jury striking, jury nullification. Let me back up. Why do we call the Ahmaud? Everybody refers to it Ahmaud Arbery. It's not. The trial is the McMichaels. Call it what it is.
Exactly.
You know, you keep giving. You're not giving life to Arbery anymore. You're giving life to these guys. You're not putting it on where it should be. You know, it's kind of like they were calling the kid that got killed here, Laquan McDonald. Laquan McDonald wasn't on trial, but if you listen to the narrative, you would think he was. Well, Laquan was killed. He was murdered by a police officer. Put it on him. Call it what it is. You know, they don't call it, you know, when they talk about Affordable Care Act, they call it Obamacare. Come on, quit mislabeling, because then you change the narrative. It should be the McMichael trial. Those are the guys who were the killers. They killed this kid. That's what we need to be calling. Call it what it is and quit playing around.
Excellent. And let's do this, Joe, before we get into, because on the flip side of what I'm going to play, I really want to hear from John, who has some inside expertise on this topic. And John and I talked a couple times this week, but I'm going to play an audio clip real quick that explains a very important case.
A peremptory challenge is a decision by the prosecutor or the defense lawyer to exclude jurors from the jury without stating any reason at all. Peremptory challenges are different from challenges for cause because challenges for cause only succeed if the attorney can show some good reason for keeping the juror off the jury. In Batson versus Kentucky, the Supreme Court ruled that it violates the Equal Protection Clause for a prosecutor to exclude a juror from the jury solely based on that juror's race. Racially discriminatory exclusion of individuals from the jury caused three basic types of harm. Number one, it denies the defendant the right to be tried by a jury of their peers. Defendants don't have the right to have jurors of their own race, but they do have the right to have the jury be drawn from a fair cross-section of the community, which needs to include members of that race. The second harm is that racial discrimination in jury selection actually violates the right of the prospective juror to serve on a jury. Finally, racially based exclusions undermine both the perception and the actuality that the justice system is fair and colorblind. At the same time, the Batson court did not want to undermine the peremptory challenge rule itself. Many attorneys believe that the ability to use peremptory challenges to keep people off the jury is essential to the adversary system, and the court wanted to avoid any perception that it was eliminating lawyers' ability to do that. A person who wanted to raise a successful Batson challenge had to establish that they were a member of a cognizable racial group that was historically subject to discrimination and that prosecutors had excluded members of that group from the jury. When a petitioner successfully raised an inference of improper discrimination, primarily by establishing these two facts, the prosecution had a duty to come forward with racially neutral reasons for excluding members of that racial group from the jury. Finally, the court would look at all the facts and circumstances surrounding the case and decide whether, in fact, the exclusion was based on improper racial motivation. After the prosecution comes forward with a racially neutral reason, the defense can argue that that reason was actually a pretext and that the true motivation was racial discrimination. A judge will decide that question based on all the facts and circumstances surrounding the case. The remedy for a Batson violation depends upon whether the violation is discovered pre-trial or post-trial. If the violation is discovered pre-trial, the remedy would be to strike the jury and to seat a new jury that has been determined without racially discriminatory motives. If the violation is discovered post-trial, the remedy would normally be the granting of a new trial. A peremptory challenge.
Okay, John, brother Dad, you and I listened to this together the other day, and there it is right there. Come on in, bro.
Yes. Last week I spoke on how I had a case before the Supreme Court, and it was an appellate court, and the Supreme Court took it from the appellate court and said that it was first time in question issues that I was raising. The interesting thing about Batson, that is no longer just race. Batson also extended to gender. The prosecutors who would use their challenges or their causes based on a person's gender. What I did was I raised the issue of people that was in my age bracket. At the time I was on trial, I was 24, 25 years old. The prosecutor kept challenging any young people, removing them off my trial. Judge did acknowledge it. Instead of properly remedying me and starting, as they stated in Batson, he should have dismissed that jury, gave me what would be called a mistrial, and if you know that you get three mistrials, you're scot-free. But he didn't give me a mistrial. What he did was he forced one of the jurors on. But what about the other jurors who was excluded already? And like it, at the beginning of this argument, he says that you're violating the right of the person to be tried and violating the right of the person to sit as a jury. Well, in my case, the prosecutor violated the rights of those who were young enough, who was young around my age, when he denied them the ability to sit on the trial because he misused his peremptory challenges and his cause, which he didn't have to explain, which the judge, in my case, forced them to explain because he recognized a pattern. So the case with Batson, is Kentucky versus Batson, is the foundation case, not just for race, but also for gender as well. And I believe that one day it would extend to age if it hasn't already. Now, I thought about this. We're talking about 11 white jurors, one black. So let's just say dealing with like a place like Greenwich, where it's predominantly white, and you have a few blacks sprinkled in there. And the way the jury pool thing says, there's a group that's selected, and then you guys got to use our challenges and got to go through who you're going to pick as jury. And the ones who are not picked in a whole other, well, this is how they go in Connecticut, a whole other pool the next day, and then another pool the next day. And the jury selection can take up to as much as 2 to 3 weeks, like what it did in my case. And I noticed that it wasn't a lot of black people to pick from. But what I should have done in hindsight is try to change venue where I know that there was going to be a pool of because they could make it look like it's a fair pool. I mean, we selected people that are valuable, and it just so happened that where I grew up in Fairfield County, there's more whites than there are blacks in certain sections. But had I moved up more where there was like inner city, change the venue, and that's one of the things that we have to also look at in this case. What is the racial balance there? Now, one of the things that Joe Mosley, I didn't know this until Joe Mosley pointed this out probably about a year ago. He said that, you know, if we're going to be involved in this process, we have to be registered to vote.
Amen.
So we can't sit back, not be registered, and complain about somebody got hung by a jury. Oh, they lynched them. They did this, they did that. And we're not part of the process.
Amen. John, let me yeah. Insert something real quick, brother, because you just went into where I really wanted to go on this also. You know, it's very easy. I'm uncomfortable with the jury selection. Stevie Wonder can see there's a problem. You know, now we're talking about a county that is, I've heard everything from 26 to 27% black. And you've only got one black person, so then I've got to go into, well, how many people even got notified to jury duty based upon the percentages of the population makeup, the racial demographics of that community. But see, that's a problem that's not going to come out at the forefront. Nobody's going to dig that deep to find out who's not. But then I also have to say that I don't know these 11 people. These 11 white people, I do not know them. But I'll tell you what Stan does know. I do know that they are fulfilling their civic responsibility, and my hat goes off to them. I don't know whether they voted for Biden or Trump, whether they're a Klan member or a Black Lives Matter supporter. I don't know. And quite frankly, at this point right now, for what I do know, I don't care. I will not condemn these 11 people who did show up, because Stan has said in these jury pools with 300 or 400 people, that they'll divide up amongst maybe 4 or 5 courts that have cases, and then you go up there, and then that's where you get voir dire, and Joe will talk about that. But that's where all that comes in. But I sat next to people, black and white, and we're just in the room where you're all there. And I've heard excuses to why they can't do jury duty. I got a hair appointment. I got to have my nails done. You know, we're going out to eat next week. I've heard all kind of reasons from black and white people why they can't be there. And then there comes a time where they say, if anybody has a reason why you can't be here, hardship, blah, 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 approach the judge. And they'll walk up, there's a big, long-ass line. I mean, I looked up, man, from my phone, thought I was at Black Friday, where they're selling the Jordans. It's a long-ass line of people who have a reason why they can't serve on jury duty. Might be a valid reason. I don't know. I'm minding my own business. But I have to say this, and I'm going to say this, and I'll be done with this portion of it. If you're one of these people who don't vote, maybe you don't vote because in some states that's where they draw juries from. But you're on Facebook blowing everything up. You got an opinion there, but you don't vote. If you're one of these people who every time you're picked for jury duty, you can't wait to get out of it, you don't get to come on now and worry about the 11 white jurors and the one black. You don't get to be in this discussion. Because there's a segment of Americans, black and white, and Hispanic and Asian and whatever else you want to throw in. We have a country of folks who are content to be professional victims. They want to come on social media and they want to preach all this bullshit, but they're not doing the civic responsibilities. And it comes with hardship. We talked earlier about the officers had to work the 2-year-old said. You can say, well, that's their job. Well, they got to live with the consequences of that job. You are a U.S. citizen. Whether folks like America, don't like America, think America's great, think America needs improvement, you are enjoying the benefits of being an American. And you have a responsibility.
Can I add something to that?
Come on, bro.
With the voting thing, should there be something taught within the home? Or should the education system need to be taught more educated on voting? Because most people don't even know the voting process. They don't even know how to vote. We're not trained on how to vote for who and for what.
Chad, before I go to Joe, let me say this, and I'm going to back off and let Joe handle it. Because I'm going to, you know, at 59, I'm going to go back to black 1960s, 59. Everybody on my Facebook knows what I'm about to say. You know what? Our churches back then, when you went into Wednesday night study, and we're not getting in the church service, so don't nobody call up and want to do that. You know, we had a representative who went to the school board meeting that stood up and told us everything going on at the school board. We had somebody who went to the city council meeting, stood up and told us everything going on with the city council. We had a representative that spoke to the chief about whatever. See, that was when we had people who took a civic responsibility, but you know what? Here's the key, brother. We also had parents, poor and struggling black parents, who got their ass up and went to the school board meetings to find out why they wanted to take civics out of the school. Civics is what we're talking about, to put a third gym class for the athletes. See, civics is no longer taught in a lot of inner city schools. We say that all the time. What do we talk about on the show? Voting, jury duty, the legislative process, the three branches of government, all this is encompassed by civics. But how many inner city schools are teaching civics anymore? They're not. We want to give an extra gym class. Kids are happy, parents are happy, and the kids are dumb as hell. So my parents did not teach me to be a Democrat or a Republican. They taught me, my father and mother who walked or drove to the fire station to vote, that's back in the black neighborhoods, you can go to the fire station to vote up north. They taught me how to see who you want, see the issue, not the person. And first off, how does that impact you, Stan, not black folks? And then how does it impact people in your economic class? Then how does it impact people who look like you? That was taught in the home, but civics was taught in the school, Joe.
Well, hey, Joe, before you go, Joe,
can
I say one thing? I'm with brother. Because, and so I came on your show, and I'm, God willing, I'll be 54 in 2 weeks. Embarrassingly, I didn't know nothing about the voting process. Even going back to, like, elementary school, you know, class president, I didn't think that was something that was for me. And it was always, you know, the Caucasian kid that was the class president. I didn't know that I could be part of the process other than, you know, we voted for whoever in class or whatever, and it was, you know, little fun stuff. But looking at real life, there should be something in our community, in our community centers. What are our community centers doing? What are the so-called leaders of the community doing if you're not preparing kids to not only just vote, but to become politicians? This should be training, teaching kids, like, from the time that, like, when a Kennedy is born, he's taught to be ready to be in that political field. All of them are prepared to take on that political field. We don't train our children that way. And I'm with the brothers. There should be something, I guess you could say in a home, but I think that those who are in position in our communities, whether district reps or whatever, should have something set up within the community that's teaching kids how to become politicians, how to use the voting process, and what are the benefits, as Joe Mosley mm-hmm. has taught me, the benefit of how you become a juror. You got to be a registered voter. How do you select a judge? You have to be a registered voter. So, yes, I'm going to shut up. Sorry, Joe.
Hey, man, no. You do me proud, brother. No. Oh, please continue. The fact is, it works. If I got one voter, I've done my job, and I got one. I think the real issue for me is that it's really tied to history, and let me tell you why. From 1693 to 1864, certain groups were not only marginalized,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't get to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start talking about the right to vote, which really only came about in, 64, 65? Think about that. We've been in this country how long, and you just got the right to vote?
Mm-hmm.
White women had the right to vote before anybody on this, except for Jim, maybe Jim, could vote. So the fact that we don't know history impels us to the future. Listen to what I say, impels us, it kills us, because we don't know where we've been, and we can't know where we're going. The most important thing you got, if you go back and read everything from Cain to X to even Gandhi, they start talking about one thing, a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
You can do anything you want with mm-hmm. that ballot. And I wish Izzy was here because we'd be in an argument right about now. The fact remains, every system that we have in this country is tied to one thing, the Voting Rights Act. Your judges, jurors, prosecutors, your defense attorneys, your public defenders all come from that system. So when you complain about, oh, my boy didn't get a fair trial, well, shit, you weren't there. So don't talk about it.
And
I'm
Joe,
not going to talk about, oh, the DA didn't give me a good deal. You put the DA
there right.
by not voting.
That's right.
When you start talking about, oh, this is an unfair trial, are you a registered voter?
You know, Joe, let me, and I'm going to make some folks mad saying this, but I'm going to say it because it needs to be said, especially in light of what you just said. You know, when, for me, as a child of the 60s, our life was simpler. We had leaders, whether it was the guy that shined shoes, fixed cars, whether it was the preacher, whether it was the old lady. We had somebody we could identify with, and when they told you something, you heard what they said because you saw what they do. Hello, James Baldwin. Today, and I'm going to say Stan's experience, when I look at leadership in reference to these incidents we're talking about that are really at the core of a lot of issues, whether it's police reform, whether it's racial disharmony, whatever we want to talk about, I find there's always the same group of so-called leaders out there. Some we run after just because they look like us. Some we despise because they look different than us, and we don't hear them. And James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say, because I see what you do. And I'm going to add the caveat. And to a lot of the leaders we're following, whether they're black or white, and I'm talking to white folks too, I'm not giving up a black speech here, or don't do. Or don't do. I think there are a demographic of people who vote against their best interest just because the person looks like them. Hello, poor white folks in West Virginia. Hello, black folks who live in the inner city and your situation ain't gotten no better. Hello, Hispanic folks where some want to be white when it's convenient, and Mexican where Puerto Rican or Hispanic. You know, I mean, we are not educated voters. And educated means, like I said, for me, and my program or my recipe, how is this decision and this person going to impact Stan, the person? Then how is it going to impact Stan, the black American? Then how is it going to impact Stan, the black American, with this socioeconomic tier, which is going to encompass anybody who makes what I make, regardless of how they look? And that is an educated voter, not because they have an R or a D in front of their name. And I think that's why we have jacked up judges in this country. Not all, but a lot of them. We have a lot of jacked up mayors, a lot of jacked up governors. Rich folks are getting richer. Poor folks are dying off, and middle class is becoming the next level of poor. Folks are going to jail with these bullshit juries. They're going to jail for life. John's sitting there with life sitting out there. And I get people who Facebook message me. They're sitting in jail 30, 40 years. And they're reaching out to me through their sisters or cousins. I mean, why are they reaching out to us? We're glad to help them. We do what we can. Where are all you elite people with names and titles? And you got time for MSNBC, Fox, CNN, ABC, CBS, BET, and God knows what. But you never seem to be at the problem. Chief Joe, no offense, but those type of people remind me of chiefs of police a lot of times.
Let me jump in. The reality is that, again, if we look at the jails right now, look how they're, look at the population, look who's there. Now, do we believe that all of those people did all those things? I got to tell you, no. We are now finding out there is such a thing as corruption in police departments. Imagine that. Are there dirty cops? Certainly. But just as there are dirty cops, there are dirty prosecutors, dirty judges. And these guys, guys being presumptuous, don't ever get tagged. When's the last judge you saw go to jail? Who's the last prosecutor you see get brought up on charges for prosecutorial misconduct? But in this case, it's easy to go after low-hanging fruit. It's still on the same tree, though. It's still on the same damn tree. The tree is still rotten. But look at what heights we go to. Now, let's go back to a real maniacal point. The Supreme Court, how do they get there? How do these judges get appointed? They get appointed by other elected officials. So when you start crying about, oh, my rights are being infringed upon, you didn't vote. And guess what? Somebody else did. Now, let's talk
Amen.
About the jury. Not even jury. Let's talk about election. The craziest thing in this world, at least in this country, is how judges are selected. It's different, and this is going to take a couple seconds. Judges are selected differently than, say, your elected state reps. In a judicial election, it's the popular vote. In other words, who gets more votes? Unlike a state rep, whatever. So let's just say a judge is running and they've got five voters. One guy votes, four don't, one guy wins. And one vote just turned that whole election.
Mm-hmm.
The whole election. I mean, it's simple. It sounds crazy, but it's the truth. Now, you take that as opposed to a popular election. Let's say the same person is running, got five voters, two vote yes, three vote no. You might have to run off. But at least five people voted one way or the other. But that one vote for that judge make him or her a lifetime appointment. That's the other thing. Look at these federal appointments. Trump appointed, I think, over 300 people within the same time that Obama had done the same thing in 8 years. Do you think he stacked the courts? Do you think he was stupid? Don't play the man for being stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play him for being stupid. The other thing is this, like Stan said, just because he's, Al Sharpton, He may not be a friend of mine, but he does get some shit right. And he said, just because he looks like me doesn't mean he's my kind. You know, so your enemy could be standing right next to you, and he may not know it.
Damn right.
But the reality is, what serves your purpose best? Just because there's a different skin tone doesn't mean they have a different mindset.
Exactly.
I have friends all over the place. And, but again, I was never taught to hate. I hated broccoli. I didn't hate you. I didn't hate you because you were a light. Again, you might have been able to outrun me or play better baseball, but I didn't hate you because of the skin tone. And I think this country, if we're going to get better, we got to do better. And the first thing is we got to wipe this hatred of skin tone. I hate ignorance. Put an ignorant person in front of me, I'm going to tear them up. I don't give a crap who they are.
You know, I wish I could get Jane Elliott on this show or Dr. Weiss. I mean, I just, there's some people I know will listen to this show, and we can beat the hell out of cops, and they're going to love it. They'll like it, ratings and clicks and likes and views. Or if we come on and we're talking about what white people have done, likes and clicks and views and comments and this flavor. But then when we get to us, to say that there's beyond all this bullshit that we see, everybody needs a team jersey nowadays. Nobody just wants to say, I'm a player. You know, back when we were all young, you played offense and defense. Today, everybody specializes. You know, I can't say that white people are the cause of everything that stand fighting against today. This is Stan talking. I can't say that because I also have to say, where were my black leaders who allowed this to happen? Stan is sitting back. I just left Waco 2 weeks ago. The city's growing. God bless him. Do what you do. But when I got there on a Monday afternoon at 5 o'clock, and I walked across that suspension bridge and went into East Waco, and I looked at all the new hotels or condos or whatever it is they're building on Elm Street, where I used to work murders, and for those of you that don't know, that is the black part of town. It was a Monday, so all the beauty shops, barbershops, everything's closed. I'm walking down Elm Street. We call it, it's Elm Avenue technically, but we call it Elm Street. And I was going to see two of my favorite people, Mel and Dwayne Banks. I knew their shop was closed, but there was construction. I couldn't get up. I walked about 6 blocks down Elm Street with nobody out there but me and a bunch of white folks. Now, I wasn't mad because it's white folks in East Waco. I was devastated. Nobody looked like me. Nobody. I visually was searching for another black person to wave to in an area I worked for 25 years. There wasn't nothing over there but us and a few good people and businesses that were there that were white, that were part of that community long before it became popular to be white in the black community. I had a police car pass me 3 times. 3. And I'm walking down the street. They couldn't see my face. My back was to them. For the first time in my life, I visited what was a black community that I lived in and worked in. I was afraid the second time that car came around. Nobody in the community looked like me anymore. And the sad part was these were people who in the 90s when crack was rampant would get out their little weak brooms and sweep their sidewalks because they believed in the concept of community policing and clean up your place and it'll get better. They didn't have any money. They had nothing, but they put effort in. Now they couldn't even afford to live there. And I thought to myself, I'm not against improvement. I'm not against making things better. But I said better for who? Because all these people who believed in Stan, not Officer Mason, but Stan, and supported Stan, can no longer afford to live there. And the few that are holding on have now become the suspicious person in their neighborhood who when they were lucky if they can get a patrol car to respond to a burglar of a motor vehicle in progress. Go ahead, John.
Now bring that back to and connect it to when we talk about picking a fair selection of your peers.
Well,
if you don't push everybody out
mm-hmm.
and bust everybody
mm-hmm.
else in, now when Joe Mosley go on trial and they pick a pool,
mm-hmm.
where are those people?
Well, John, let's say this. I say before I can get to the people who did the picking, let me get to the people that we've been electing in our communities because solely because they got 80% of our attention because they look like us. They didn't live around us. They had a title or a name. And so when we look at what happened, an example of what I'm talking about, the example I gave, but in situations like this across the board, when we talk about our lack of influence in the communities, we have to say, well, who is it that we have voted for that has influence? What have they done or not done? But see, we don't put their ass on the grill. Light them up. See, if you've got people on the Chamber of Commerce or you've got people that are on our council or you got people that are in positions of power and influence that are not reporting back, not to the black community, but to the community within that demographic of what is going on, let's hold their ass accountable. Because the rich ones, I guarantee you, the rich ones are going back to the rich community and saying not only what's happening, but what's upcoming and what's down the road. It is only ours because too many of our leaders, and I'm not talking about black, I'm talking about middle-class, well-meaning people of any color, are so happy to be at the table that they don't recognize there's only two places you can be at the table, sitting at it or sitting on it. You either are a guest or the main course, and most of the time our leaders get ate up because they're the main course and they just happen to be invited. Let me step down.
Go along to get along.
Exactly.
I was gonna say when you walk across that bridge, you think you're in a whole other city?
Yeah. I mean, Chief, it was. I mean, to some people, it was a place of murders and drug dealing. But you know, for me, it was a place where even those drug dealers I had a relationship with, I could say goodbye. Tonight I'm here. It ain't gonna happen. They respected that and they left. Conversely, what did the community get? At least 8 to 10 hours of peace and quiet. At the same time, when somebody was shot or murdered, what did Stan get in return? Who did it? It was harmony. It was this. And you know, I pleaded to have bathrooms put in a public park. There was never money in the budget. Never. Or we just don't have it in the budget. But we're writing tickets to these poor people peeing against the tree. And I'm not going to go down that whole road, but that aggravated me because now I see all the development that's here now. But when I was simply asking for a place where people can use a restroom, it wasn't in the budget. We don't have the manpower, but we had the manpower to go over there and write tickets and do drug raids and do all that. I'm not saying that doesn't need to be done. But we can address criminals all day long. But until we address the good citizens and their quality of life, we're doing a disservice to policing. Claire, I see you nodding.
No, I just agree with you. It's like the public bathrooms. I agree with a lot of what was said so far. I'm just sitting back and learning, man. I'm enjoying it. I'm here. I like it. It's good stuff. I'm listening.
Well, we gonna keep going with it. No, Shasta,
I know you're not gonna let her get away with that, Stan. Come on, Claire. Come on, Claire. We need more action, Claire.
No, I don't have anything to say. That's it. That's all I got.
Well, Claire, let me ask you this, because you're kind of like me. You're one of these people that folks spend so much time trying to figure you out that they never take time to learn who you are. There are so many battles that you're fighting right now. Is she black? Is she white? Is she gay? Is she straight? You have so many issues. You walk out the front door, and I feel comfortable. You know, I mean, I just look at everything you and Liv have to go through just to be you. And God forbid, I can imagine now if you were sitting in with one of these juries weighing over you. How many people are trying to figure out what the hell is she? Is she Hispanic? Is she black? Is she white? Is she mixed? Is she gay? Is she straight? Is she Christian? You struggle with so much. What
that's
is it like for you?
Well, that's the problem is with that jury selection is it shouldn't be about what color I am, who I go home to. It shouldn't matter any of that. It should matter who the person is and what the act, clearly the actor at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You should be pissed off at what happened. I think that's mm-hmm. the thing about the jury selection that I wanted to bring up, is that you need to have a diverse jury, one, and that includes not people that don't see color, because if you don't see color, then that means you're just not acknowledging color. You're not acknowledging that people are different and color exists, because color does exist. And if you're not acknowledging color, that means you're also not acknowledging when people were being hanged because they were being hanged for color and color only. So when you go as far as jury selection, yeah, it should be equal across the board. And at that point, you should judge the act, not necessarily the actor.
Exactly.
As far as race goes.
Claire, I want to reiterate that Kentucky versus Batson is not just race. It also was about gender. There are prosecutors sick enough to think that women are not shouldn't be on certain type of cases, and because maybe women may be more emotional or may lack the understanding how a weapon works, although you have firearm experience. So how would you feel as a woman if you know that you was discriminated against by a prosecutor just because you're a woman? Take race out of it. Woman. And then we go, I want to go back to this 11-1. How many men, how many women, what are their backgrounds? Because that's all important.
Well, I'd be pissed off, for one, because women got the right to vote years ago, so therefore, not only do I have the right to vote, therefore, it means I have the right to be on a jury as well. So not only that diversity within color, but diversity within gender, too, because maybe women are more emotional, okay? Wouldn't that be good to have on a jury, someone that's more emotional, that can understand emotional intelligence, rather than somebody that's like, nope, I see color, they're going to jail. Wouldn't that be better to have somebody to step in and say, well, let's really think about what we're doing here. So it's absolutely sexist and discriminatory.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd be enraged. I'd be absolutely pissed off.
I want to bring something up that we haven't touched on yet. We brought up the attorneys. We brought up some of the prosecutors that are dirty, that whole thing. I mean, you have to understand, what's the objective of the attorney? Well, whether it's the defense attorney or the prosecutor, they want to win, right? So why would they not take every advantage that they can to select the people that they have sitting on the jury? You cannot tell me that there's not a whole science behind picking folks. I kind of wish Billy was here, but there's a science behind picking people for the jury. This is not just some kind of random thrown together group of people. There's specific data that goes behind the selection of somebody. I will tell you right now, I've been selected for jury duty multiple times. You know how many times I've served on the jury? Zero. You know why? Because I'm a cop. I'm a police officer. I'm a strike. That's what I am. They hold on to me, and every time I've been selected, I'm there all day. All day. Because they use me to strike somebody on the other end. That's what they do. And I've had prosecutors tell me that you're going to sit there all day if they don't get rid of me up front, right? So we can't disregard that. I don't know enough about what they teach in law school on how to pick people for a jury. I can only guess. And I imagine it's probably a pretty interesting subject. And that's why you get juries like you get. I'll never condemn, and like Stan, I'm never going to condemn 12 people that are sitting as a jury. They showed up. They were there.
Absolutely.
They got fit. They're seated. You know what? If you're not there, and the way you get there is by being a registered voter, I got nothing for you. You can't complain then. If you don't get picked because of some other reason, okay, that's cool. If it's shown that there's bias or they've broken the law in selecting a particular individual to sit on the jury, that's a whole nother deal. But your ass has to be there to get selected.
That's right.
Number one. Number two, you know, and I've been asked that question on two different occasions. Do I feel like I could be unbiased enough to sit on a jury? I feel personally, yes, I think I could. But it's because of what I do for a living that prohibits me from doing that. And that's part of that picking. So I'm not going to give a free pass on you know, a lot of this stuff because the attorneys are part of this as well. Both defense and prosecution. So you can't disregard what they are doing in order to set them up for the W. That's what they're trying to do, right? I mean, that's the whole purpose of it. I'm trying to get my client off. I'm trying to get this person convicted. It's a fight. So they're going to use every single thing they've got available to them to make that happen for them.
Chief, I wish it was just that cut and dry. But you're right about one thing. They have what they call jury experts, expertise is to come in. Rarely do lawyers use them, but they have experts who select jurors for you. They tell you, oh, he'll make a good juror, and that'll be based on the type of case. So if you're talking about ballistics and stuff like that the layperson wouldn't know anything about, and even what you explaining would have a difficult time. Well, he would try to get someone, let's just say like the brother up top, what's his name, CL. So if he knew that CL had been in the armed forces, that he had weapon experience with weapons, so he would try to get people like that to be on the jury.
Right.
So I do have a problem with this. I don't think every attorney is there to win every case. I don't think every prosecutor is there. I've seen someone who was killed by someone who was a Marine vet that was close to me, and everybody knows the prosecutor didn't do his best job to convict this dude. The dude killed him in cold blood. They had plenty of stuff that was there. That's another story. I've also seen attorneys who haven't fought for their clients, maybe because they took this case on pro bono or they're down for special public defender's duty. Or maybe you didn't finish paying them. Maybe you didn't pay him enough. Your family couldn't afford the $30,000, $40,000 that he wants. Oh, yeah, I represent him for $20,000. You think you're going to get the best of that attorney? You only paid him $10,000. And the person waiting to go to trial next, he got four or five more cases he's going on trial with. No, they're not all there.
And I agree.
They want to be able to dispose these cases as fast as possible so they can continue to make money.
Right, and I agree.
And they do it at the cost of people's status.
Yeah,
if I'm black and I have the income, I can walk.
You're going to do. Yeah.
But no,
I agree.
Those are the ability.
Yeah, that's part of what we're talking about, the problem with the system, these crappy attorneys. But I'm talking about, and I hate to put him on the spot. Well, a good friend of the show, we asked him, do you want to win or lose? And his answer might be, I want to see justice, who's an attorney friend of the show. And that would be perfect. I'd love that answer. But what do they want to do? They want to win. A good solid attorney wants to get their client off, right?
But let me,
a good solid one. I'm not talking about these rat boys.
But let me inject this though, John.
Real quick.
Chief, one of the things that I came to learn is that I said this to an attorney before, that you have to be moralist, right? Because with the right amount of money, you will get a guilty person off. Don't think that a lawyer is there for justice, because he'll represent someone that he knows that his client is guilty and get him off.
I'm talking. I was.
There's only two people that take the Hippocratic Oath. Now think about that. Judges and doctors.
Yeah, when I was wrestling with Charles, I was actually kind of using Billy as an example. I mean, friend of the show. He would be somebody that would seek justice. I would feel comfortable
but
he don't like to lose.
Right, but there, you know, and when I think, and when we get in, and you're right, both of you are right. We talk about winning and losing. I think that is the problem with not just law enforcement, but the criminal justice system. We're more concerned with winning and losing, and winning and losing only benefits the entity or individual involved. It's not about the justice for the victim or justice for the accused. You know, Mike Denham, friend of the show, Mike said they don't pick them being jurors out of fairness. They pick jurors they think, somebody just typed in, they think may be sympathetic or biased in their favor. Say it again. Attorneys aren't all interested in justice. They're interested in winning. Now, that's a profound statement, and it is profound because what Mike just did is showed we are one of the best justice systems in the world right now, but we ain't perfect. We're seeing that every day in the men who spent 15, 20, 25 years in jail for murder they didn't commit being released now after their good days are gone. But I think when you speak to that, which is just simply right on its core moral base, not its outside influences, not its titles, it's just the right thing to do. You're going to invoke enemies. You're going to invoke discomfort. You're going to get some people who applaud you. But you know how you know when you're right? You ain't getting paid. You're not getting gratuities. You're not getting invited to the dinners. But this is one thing that you do get to do. You get to retire at the end of all of it and sit at home drinking a beer, relaxing, and not having your mind, man, I wish I wouldn't have done so-and-so this way. I wish I would have waited and handled this better. Yeah, I put that guy or that woman in jail because they pissed me off. You get to finish the game with a clear conscience. And that, my friends, is more important than any title you retire from, any money people give you. If it's about justice, they say justice is blind. I say she's peaking. And she's been peaking in this country. From the judges to the prosecutors to the lazy-ass defense attorneys down to the officers, the chief, the citizens who don't give a damn unless it impacts them. America has lost its way in being American by the definition thereof. And with right. that, I'm a step of glass, Shaq.
Let me add this thing. Let me add this thing, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, bro.
This particular case, right, with these jurors that pick, somebody on the outside looking in would say, well, dang, they struck down 25 so-called black jurors and got it on down to one black male, and they got it down to four women, right, white women at that. And I guess they alternates or something. And they picked 11 white men. So that means there's three defendants in this case, right? Three mm-hmm. white men in this case. So that means they gave them, if you're looking at it, if you don't know, like I said, all the ins and outs about jury and picking, but somebody looking around here, you would say, damn, these three white men actually get three people of their peers per person, right?
Yeah.
You get three white, one white man get three white men to choose their, you know, fate. As a juror, the other one get three.
You know, brother, it's like they got folks ready to come in off the bench.
But let me throw this at you. There's a show that's on. It's called Bull,
Watch Bull.
Bull is actually there's more truth to that than you think. There is a science to jury picking, jury selection. There's police science. I've sat and listened to it. It's profile. For lack of a better term, and it works. So we don't know in this selection if they do having the women on that. Statistics have shown that women are more prone to listen to logic than men. That's case-based, the truth.
And they are, as one someone said earlier, they're emotional. They're more apt to think straight than some of the people on this panel. Thank you, Claire. But it's a fact. Again, the fact that we have that type of science, what else are we missing? But let me go back to something Claire was talking about earlier, the voting. White women got the 19th Amendment was the right for women to vote. White women, understand that, white women. The rest of us didn't get included till 64. So from 64 to now, which is 2021, hasn't been that long. So we're talking about a system that's been in place since 1693, possibly, somewhere in there, that has, in and of itself, fed on itself to make sure that it protected itself.
Mm-hmm.
So within 50 years, do you think they're going to turn that over to you that easy without a fight?
Let's do this, Joe.
Right.
Because we're
right.
We're at an interesting point. I want to do this real quick because we're at that 30-minute mark. And I always want to inject our solutions, proposals, ideas, concepts, radical thoughts, because it's good that we can bitch about a problem. But now we're moving into the next phase of it. Who knows? Maybe the world solution or the country solution comes from this show or from somebody here. But now, when it comes to juries and how they're selected, how do each of us individually, what is it that you believe should be explored, is a solution, is a proposal? How do we bring about some change that's needed in the jury selection process and the criminal justice system in general? Shaq, I'm going to start with you, bro.
Well, I mean, like I said, we have the most sophisticated minds, masterminds, you know what I'm saying, educated on law, ethics, and all that, right? Why not, if you're going to have these big cases like this and people selecting jurors stuff, why not have a little juror class, like where you, like pre-class, like say maybe 6 months prior to the trial or, you know, 12 months prior to the trial, the jurors, the people that are going to come in, and give like some type of a tutorial on how to be a juror and kind of give people information on things they should look for. Because, see, they only get it to the jurors that they actually select. They actually being selected for that creature. They have first of all nothing about being a jury. They don't know nothing about different cases and how the case is going to be judged, how it's going to be viewed. Only the select crew that get picked, the 12 that get picked, they actually get the instructions on how this case is supposed to be judged and viewed, how you supposed to, as a juror, supposed to rule on this particular case or whatever. So I think they said we got the most sophisticated minds. That's another job you can create. That'd be another way you can create another job for some other people. Like you said, but to come in and be analysts, to come in and start to give people some type of a tutorial on juror, on being a juror prior to becoming a juror. Maybe that's far fetched, but I think we got the mind to do that.
Hey man, good point. Let me drop down. Claire, what you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking about what I pointed out earlier about there being, well, and I think Joe pointed out too, about women being on a jury. So if we're going to be fair, what if you did six men, six women, and make sure that there's are at least six women if you're going to be fair across the board. I mean, that would be my input. What it doesn't matter race, depending on the case, obviously, you wouldn't want it to be too one-sided, but at least if you had six men and six women, that's a good start. Aw.
Sam brought his hat dog out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
She's 13 years old. Y'all better recognize and appreciate the age right here. She's 13 years old. And
what's her name, Stan?
This is Lolly. And Lolly's here for me every show. She sits in here with me and you know, and she holds it down. She can't see shit and she can't hear a damn thing. So you got to clap real loud and be real visible. But you know what? She's been through a lot, and she listens to these shows. She thinks some of y'all crazy sometimes. But she sit up in here with me. She don't bark. I ain't have to go, hey, shut up. I wish the world had more people like this little dog, right? This is my segue solution. Because you know what? She loves me and my wife and supports us, and she doesn't complain. She doesn't bark and scream when we're talking, and she look at us like we're crazy when we're not getting along. But you know what? The world needs more people like her. So, you know, she's like, what up, dogs? And we go, I'm going to defer over, and I'm going to say, John, what's your solution, bro?
Wow. The show's not long enough, Stan. we have a system that's totally chaotic. It has an appearance that it's okay, but for those who really like do the research and know this whole system, man, from reform with the police to prosecutor misconduct to judicial misconduct to attorneys misrepresenting their clients. So taking jury is tough, man. You know, imagine sitting there, someone never heard no testimony, yet they say, well, looking at you see my client, and he looks innocent or guilty to you. Oh, he's guilty. I feel like he's guilty. But you heard no testimony. He's still in 4 years. And I know that everyone on this panel, and excuse me what I'm about to say, no, I don't want nobody to think I'm an atheist. I'm Muslim. But everybody on this panel and anybody listening to the show, everybody thinks that they can sit there and not be biased. But I was asked a question when I was studying law in prison. Someone asked me, said, well, if you think that you can't be biased, then how come the world has condemned the devil and no one's heard his testimony yet? The only testimony we have heard so far has been from God, but yet everyone condemns the devil. So it made me look at the way that I looked at, and I'm not atheist anymore. it just made me look at the way that I look at the whole process and learning to be more objective in my views and not to try to rush out there with a verdict for, and even looking at these 11-1, you know, panel, jury pool, you know, what are the circumstances? How did they go about selecting this 11-1? And, you know, I leave it at that, man, you know, but the whole system or systems needs to be fixed, and we got to have a starting point, whether it starts with the police reform and working our way on through, but we can't just throw a bunch of stuff out there because we won't get nothing done.
Exactly. Let me go to a caller real quick. 314 area code 4600. Good morning.
How you doing, Stan? Well,
all
the
right.
Court's already said that, I guess you're talking about the Albury case in Georgia. When they dismissed Well, they dismissed one juror for making a biased statement when it, as a matter of fact, he admitted that he made the biased statement. I think he did. But the courts have already said that the striking of jurors did not have anything to do with a person, with their race. That statement's already been put out there. And, you know, I heard somebody make another statement about the ability to vote. Black males always had the ability to vote according to the Constitution. It was the 15th Amendment that allowed women to vote because it wasn't look like that. And another thing, the 1965 Voters' Rights Act had nothing to do with voting. It had to do with registration. But I just want to add that in there.
You know, before I go to Joe real quick, I'm going to say that what the judge did in that case of the Ahmaud Arbery case is he used the word, and judges are very careful when they use terminology and words when they speak, and he used the word discrimination. He chose that word to use. He could have substituted it with a lot, But I think it's important for people to know that constitutionally, there are no tools in place for the judge to go back and challenge the strikes that were made because of the way the system is set up. It's not that the judge agreed with or condoned or co-signed or underscored what happened. He was not in a position legally to change anything without jeopardizing a mistrial. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying on that part of the Auburn trial, but that was one thing that judges, when judges speak, they're very particular about the words they use. They're very
well, you're right. It's the states that set up the process in many cases of the time. Like people talking about police reform. The federal government can't reform police. Police departments are allowed to exist based on a state's constitution and also the legislative statutes at large, which cover the whole state. So people have been bamboozled thinking that the federal government come in and tell you police officers they got to wear green pants and pink shirts. That's just not true. In a consent decree, like when Holder came into Ferguson and entered into a dissent decree with the city of Ferguson, that was not an order. It was an agreement between two different parties. Some of the points of the agreement was adhered to, taken on, and a lot of them was dismissed. So anyway, I'm going to continue to listen.
All right. Appreciate you, Brother Big Joe. Come on, man. Commentary and final solutions. From you, what you thinking?
You know, you don't want to hear what I wanted to say to that last caller because everything he said was, well, I just leave it at that. But let me just go back and stay on point. I can't be distracted by foolishness. The fact of the matter is that the Civil Rights Act of 65 gave us the vote. He can sit around and tell you what was pre-ratification and Blacks could have the right to vote in 1870. Yeah, okay, yeah, you had the right to get hung, too. But again, we're talking about someone that's new to this country, and they read to what they want. That's his business. But going back to the main point of this whole jury thing, I agree with, I like Smooth's idea. I'd love to see a program online. But again, we're assuming everybody has the access to the Internet. But an online platform with how to vote, not just how to vote, but how to get on and be on the jury, how to hopefully get selected with jury, I think is great. What I'd also like to see is at some point us having a, even if we just use this platform, hosting a jury informational seminar.
Let's do it.
We do it here.
I love it.
That's how we do it. I mean, you know, if nothing else, nobody else does it, let us do it. So
I love
it. You know, I do it class now where I think I've shared it with some of you. I do it on the grammar school, a high school, and a collegiate level where I take a class and I actually take them through the process of why you should vote. And I don't care how you vote, but vote. And I usually wind up with, at least on the collegiate level, I wind up with at least 40 registered voters. On the high school level, I usually get at least six of them to say, well, you know, I'm going to talk to my parents. But it's when we have a chance offline, I'll share that with you, and you're welcome to use it. But it works.
You know,
I'd like to see us as a group try that.
Well, let's do it. Right now, we got three different states on here, and I'm sure we can get a hell of a lot more than three different states with the Facebook people. And I'd like to at least have at least 10 to 20. Representatives all on here at once where we discuss that. And it doesn't matter who you vote for. We're not going to do vote Republican, vote Democrat. We're not going to do that. That is not the issue.
Right.
But just informing people, and I want to pay particular for Stan. I want to pay a particular amount of attention to those who have been incarcerated and feel that they lost their right to vote when they didn't. They don't even know that they didn't. And then those who deserve to have it back, like John Fulton got it back, so that they get it back. And I don't care what color, how they vote. You know, that's part of being America. Joe, that's an excellent solution. We're going to get to work on that. We're going to make that one happen.
Hey, Danny, let me add another solution with this technology. That's excellent with you guys coming up with. And you can get it on TV. You got smart TV where you can get a channel. on smart TV now.
Okay, yes. Stan has another
we
problem.
We can look into that then.
We can look at that. Chief, we put a lot out on the plate today.
I mean, excellent ideas. And you know, I gotta say, I think the idea of training, as we started this conversation, what do we do when we're lacking performance in your job or your life, wherever you train, right? So let's go back. Let's talk about something that already came up. We start talking about civics, right? Civics course. The importance of what we were talking about, it cannot be understated. How important is a jury? It is damn important. That information needs to be put out. That needs to be taught very early on, and the absolute importance of it. Right now, you ask the general public how important would it be to sit on a jury. Most folks are like, man, I'm just trying to figure out how to get out of it, you know, as Stan used in his example. But knowing what it is, knowing how it operates, I mean, we do that on the law enforcement side, right? We're at the police academy. We do mock trials, right? Claire, you remember the mock trial, right? We put officers on the stand. We brought in defense attorneys and somebody that acted as a judge, and we went through the whole process. Cadets act as the jurors. They make the decision on guilt or innocence, so we move on, so they have at least an idea. So, you know, Shaq's idea is a brilliant idea to teach people how to do this. I mean, we've done it in multiple other areas. I mean, when Miranda was on, she invited me to talk about how we conduct traffic stops at one point on a whole nother show. And so we're teaching people how these things are supposed to happen. We need to continue with that idea. The earlier on we can show the importance of these issues, the better off that we will be, right? And we're talking about a system or systems, as John put it, and it's true, that have been around for a long time, have not been fair for a lot of people for a long time. They're not going to be changed overnight. So we need to go back. We need to start telling people about the importance of particularly jury selection, how important it is to be on there, maybe even change it to where it's not so looked down upon, you know, with your $10 fee, right? But maybe that should change. Maybe we should make it more impactful, right? I mean, even in the last couple of years, it's been policies in like local government, not everywhere, but in some local governments where they've actually changed it to make employees understand that, hey, we're going to pay you to go sit on a jury. I mean, you're not losing any work. It's your civic duty to go do that. You don't have to take a vacation day. You're going to go. And that's a federal law. Sometimes it's slow to get down to states, and that's been around for a long time. But there are not a lot of places that adhere to that. So we need to change that narrative as to that this is not just a pain, you know, an inconvenience to go sit on. This is a very important thing to do because someone's life technically will depend upon it or could depend upon it. I mean, so that's where I see this, and I think that the idea of teaching folks what this is, what this is about, how they're selected, the science behind it, everything, I think that is phenomenal, and that is my idea, and I think that I would be happy to be part of that and put forth any information I could from the PD side or law enforcement side for sure.
And, you know, Chief, I can't applaud that any more than to add this. You said this could be anybody's situation. I want to insert something and say to everybody listening to this, everybody who may listen, you know, later, it may be you. It may be your ass. And this is what I throw this term out. Americans. Our Republicans or Democrats, not black folks, white folks, or Hispanic, not that straight Christian, Muslim. Americans, stop being selective victims. You don't give a shit till it impacts you or people who look like you or people you know personally. Then you want to be all over Facebook. Educate yourself on the system. So when you say the system isn't fair, you can say what's broken and what we need to do to fix it instead of saying it's broken. We know policing needs to be reformed. We don't have police reform right now because all these idiots, Republicans and Democrats, don't have the guts to fix it. People have bought into what the police tell you they are, what some officers believe they are, and somewhere therein lies the truth. We started this show out not talking about heroes or gods or superhuman beings. We talked about men and women who looked at a two-year-old that was killed. And a police chief who has to not just balance what he saw, but all the feelings of his officers and the two-year-old that's deceased and the family members and the media attention and all the bullshit that comes with nothing more than a two-year-old was senselessly killed. And then we say to the chief, make it all work. We pay y'all enough. Ladies and gentlemen, there are officers out there. I did what I did and saw what I saw. I went out there every day and did my job. Like Joe, like the chief, like Claire. Not because we're paid to do it. That's bullshit, because there's a lot of days you go home from some incidents and you say, they don't pay me enough to deal with this shit.
That ain't no lie.
But you know why you do it? Because you remember when you were working that murder or that rape or whatever it is you were dealing with, you saw somebody over on the corner that was just thankful you were there. That maybe said it might have been a thug, a hoodlum, an old lady, maybe a preacher. It might have been somebody. But the next, sometime in your shift, somebody will come by without a title, without a mental health degree, and they go, you okay? You all right? Can I get you something? You want some water? You okay? You do it for those citizens. And I would venture, and this is my conservative guess, for 80% of the men and women working in inner city neighborhoods, they don't just do it for the citizens. They're out there doing it for the least. My Bible insert, as you do unto the least of my people, not the ones who look like you, think like you, vote like you. Exactly right. So I'll end this segment with James Baldwin. I can't believe what you say, because I see what you do. Appreciate everybody being here. Shaq, before you leave, where can people find you? When's your show? Take a minute.
Oh, okay, yes. Hey, man, I so appreciate you standing everybody on this panel, man. I so appreciate you guys inviting me. But you can find me at CL Smooth Live. Every Thursday on Blog Talk at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The calling number is 516-666-9834. You guys can catch, go on the website, catch all the episodes. It's www.clsmoothlive.com. Please subscribe so you can get any updates. And I'm definitely looking for people to come on in too, man. I want to have these conversations, move these conversations forward, you know, on all aspects. You can catch me on Instagram at CLE Smooth 81. And I just want to, I had another show, Stan. You never, we ended the show on October 17th, and we might come back next year for Reconstruction, but it was the Shaq and Stice show, the Workman Blues show. I really love that show. We was putting respect on the everyday working man and woman. Yeah, man, on the Blog Talk. And we might do some things, man, on YouTube. But I had to shout out to my partner in crime, my partner in podcast, Jack Stice. He also is PKF Topics on YouTube. He's good. His motto is putting kids first. That's what PKF Topics means, putting kids first. Patriotic Clown Face on Instagram, man. Check him out. We're trying to do this small guy trying to do good things, man.
You know what, Shaq? But this is the thing. We don't advertise, sponsor. We don't have none of that here. We pay for this. And our thing is, we're not saying we know everything or we got it right. But we're going to open that door and bring in that little box you're sitting in today, that little seat. We want to start bringing in people who are trying to do something. We ain't got it all going on. But you know what? If we're willing to each its reach, if I don't cop, it's not mine to have. George Clinton said that. That was not something that was profound from the mountaintop. George Clinton said that.
Right.
Don't know. But, bro. Real recognizes real, and iron sharpens iron. And that's what we do on this show. And so we appreciate you being here. I was open. If anybody got the last shout-outs, man, this was good.
Salute.
Thank you. Hey, Ted, for the caller, I want him to know that prosecutors are skilled, and they ask what are called loaded questions. And they'll get a prospective juror to answer a certain way. And once he answers, then he says to the judge, I'm going to use one of my challenges. Because he got you to say something that may disqualify you, although his motive is race-based or
right,
gender-based, but he will ask a different type of question, a loaded question, to get you to answer a certain way. So for that person who called in, you need to do a lot more research when you call the show, because we prepared over here, my dude. Trust me, we prepared over here.
Did John Dar drop his bomb? Hey, look. Appreciate
my Tyson punch.
Woo! Hey, you know, hey, like I said, we don't play. We got somebody for everybody. That's a Texas word.
Yeah.
For y'all that don't know, everybody.
Everybody.
That means, as they say up north, everyone.
Hey, Louis.
Down there.
I'm
just
saying, I'm
home.
I got it on.
There you go, bro. You feeling it? We gonna get out. Everybody, be safe. You know, keep your social distance. Rona's real. It ain't gone yet. You know, hang in there.
Yeah.
And God bless. We're gonna get out. Thanks, everybody.
Have a good weekend.
Peace.
Peace.